This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the February 5th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you, joined by Mike Hogan, a.k.a. at DRF Formulator. What's going on, man?
I don't know. You know, we got another good weekend of racing. We did, I thought, one of the best webinars we've done yesterday. So anybody that hadn't seen it or attended it, definitely check that out.
It was a lot of fun. We went over the notes, the charts, and the replays features in Formulator. And the way you were describing it, I think you've used that analogy before, but it really hit home with me during yesterday's show, where you were talking about how those features of Formulator can really help tell the story of an individual horse in a way that can give you a better line mm-hmm. on what they're likely to do in their next start, which mm-hmm. of course is the mm-hmm. pretty much the name of the game when you're trying to bet these horses running in a circle and try to make money on them.
Well, and you had a brilliant idea, which was to reach out to some of the NHC players, not just the players, but the ones that did very well at the NHC.
The final table.
Yeah, and so getting some specific notes, exact examples from Paul Matisse and Roger Satina really helped make it a much, much more interesting webinar than just you and me yapping about.
You know. Anybody listening to this show is clearly fine with you and me yapping. I will say that. But I also agree that it was a neat little extra element we had there. And what it helps for me to do is answer. There's a few questions I get asked all the time.
Right.
And one of them, the one of the more grating ones to me is people saying, well, isn't this just people contest? It's not handicapping, is
right.
it? It's people just right. reaching for long shots. Mm-hmm. And I think definitively in that webinar and at the NHC final table, we proved that's not the case.
Yeah.
These are cogent cases by sophisticated handicappers and in many cases aided by the deeper dive one can do with a program like DRF Formulator. Mm-hmm. So that was personally very gratifying to me to be able to do. And it was also great to keep the NHC at the forefront of my mind just because, you know, for me, that event is my Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. It's my World Series. Mm-hmm. It's the focal point of my year. I joke. I don't even really joke. It's the reason I have a job. And so I get out there and my head's just so filled with stories. And folks will probably notice I filed a bunch of extra stuff this week on DRF.com mm-hmm. going through what I saw to be the key storylines. I even have one up today about, which is actually more about next year's NHC, Sally Goodall at the first chance contest that Dave Gutfreund won, finished second, and became the first person to earn 15 qualifications to the NHC. So wow. Lots of storylines, and I thought maybe we'd start off the show
yeah.
by recapping them. For you, sitting here following the DRF coverage, mm-hmm. what leapt out to you as sort of the biggest storyline of the event?
Well, the biggest storyline, you know, I think, again, like you said, in reaction to a lot of the people that I saw on Twitter, oh, it's a stab fest. I don't know how anybody could have had that horse.
I automatically block anyone
well,
who uses
right.
the word stab in the comments, by
right.
the way. That's just like, you're gone.
Right. Time and time again, we see the same players having success. The Matisse, the Roger Satinas, Stanley Bavlish in the final table. You know, I think it's clear that that is not the case. So certainly that's got to be a key part of the storyline there is these are not just people getting lucky with some long shots here and there and falling into a bunch of money. These are smart, good, you know, the best handicappers in the country.
And I think it's a testament to the NHC format that as the number of players in the field and the number of entries has gotten larger, there were many out there, including me, who thought that might lead to some more aberrant results.
Chaos,
you saw with the World Series of Poker,
sure.
at a certain point, of course, they have a factor of however many more people in that event, but at a certain point, you get a final table where it's people that you haven't really heard of. Whereas where we are right now with the NHC and the way that the event is organized, we had a who's who at that final table.
Yeah,
to me, it was
sure.
it was the perfect mix
right.
where you had three professional players in the Matisse brothers and Charlie Davis. You had Roger Satina, who'd finished second in the event before. What an amazing feat. I mean, to me, mm-hmm. that might be I mean, it's certainly on the short list of most amazing feats in the history of the event that somebody has run twice. To run twice in that second is just inconceivably awesome horse player you must be to pull that one off. We had a former champion in the top 10. Mm-hmm. And then we also had some great stories. From a marketing point of view, we've got to do more with the dentist.
I got to tell you, dentist.
Because the dentist, love it. My buddy Ernie Powers, is... for a lot of people out there and a lot of the daily racing form, print readership especially, this is a story that needs to be told. Mm-hmm. This is a guy just turned 60 years old this week.
There's a story in here looking at the print version right now.
He made the print version?
Did.
Excellent.
He did.
That makes me happy.
Yeah.
As a 59-year-old, he was a rookie on the NHC Tour, ends up qualifying, ends up getting to the final table and winning $75,000.
That's great.
And to make it more gratifying, for me, the first thing he did when he wanted to get involved in contest play was read my book, The Winning Contest Player.
Love it.
And then there he was at the table, sitting next to three guys who, when I was talking pro players before, I left out Dave Gutfreund. He's another you could put in that mix. Though I guess he does poker more these days than racing, but still he's at least on the bubble of that.
Professional gambler.
Yeah. Yes. And so you've got. Those guys are all, they're all in the book.
Yeah.
So there he was a year ago. He's reading this book, and then he's sitting at the final table with Gutfreund here and Matisse there. It's pretty, and Satine over there. It's pretty cool. It's a very, very personally gratifying story. I think it was a great event, and I'm hoping that as it continues to grow, we can keep that quality of the playing field there at the final table. And I think we got a long way to go before we expand past the point where it's just people. Because that's the thing. It's like you can have a miracle day. It's very hard to have three miracle days.
Right.
And that's what you would need to do to be someone lucky there.
Right. Well, and you made an analogy to the World Series of Poker. And I think that there are certainly a case to be made for comparing the two. However, the difference is that I see is the NHC, you can't go all in and be done after one bad beat.
That's a great point.
You can't, your whole tournament doesn't hinge on one horse or one race. You've got to be good again and again and again. And even if you do stab, like you said, and find that cap horse, you got to do it a few other
one
times.
One ain't gonna do it. You're gonna be needing six.
Yeah,
and that's a lot harder.
It's hard to get lucky that many times.
Exactly, and that brings up another great point about the differences in contest formats. And there are many people out there. Brett Wieners had a ton of success on the NHC Tour. Said this in one of my preview articles. Talked about how to him the NHC is the best test of handicapping as opposed to betting. Me as a player, selfishly, I'll be honest, live bankroll, single track live bankroll, that's what I would be doing were I eligible to play, just because it suits my style of handicapping, not because I think it's a morally superior format or anything. But live bankroll contests a lot of times come down, they're betting contests, gambling contests. Handicapping plays a critical role, but at the end of the day, it's true, if you can basically push in on one opinion and win, it's easier to get lucky doing that than it is to get lucky over the course of 3 days playing all these different types of races.
Well, and those types of formats tend to, by nature, benefit those that are professional gamblers that don't have a problem putting $10,000 on a single opinion, horse.
That's right.
Whereas most horse players, they're not in that position. It's real money. It's their own money that they could say, I'll walk away with, that they could go back to their wives and kids and say, I decided to just take the cash instead. Yeah.
Is it going to be a year tuition, or am I going to try to catch this guy on the lead?
Right.
These are the kind of decisions people have to make, which is why somebody like my buddy Tommy Massis, who is not I don't know if he calls himself a professional gambler or not, but the fact is that he can use the money, but the money just doesn't. For whatever reason, the way he's wired, the money doesn't mean anything to him.
Sure. I mean, he doesn't blink putting a $4,000 exacta box.
Yeah, exactly. And he said at the time he didn't have $4,000 to his name, and he's walking up to the window making a $4,000 exacta box. It ain't how I'm wired.
Right.
But a guy like that, or somebody for whom the money does not matter, they're always going to have the edge in the live bank. Whereas the NHC format, while it was won by a pro who's also a great live bank player this year, I feel like you keep the sort of dollar in a dream story alive, and the format has its benefits. I mean, same Tommy I was just talking about made a very cynical comment about it. in the preview article about, you know, it was a very cynical comment about the format. I'll just leave it like at that. And I'm thinking to myself, Tommy, you just don't like it because it doesn't suit your style.
Sure.
There's nothing inherently wrong with it.
You feel you're up against it. Did you notice that little Twitter discussion between Tommy and Jonathan Kinchin?
Oh, that was fantastic. Yeah. You summed that up for people who didn't see it.
It was great. I mean, Jonathan and Tommy, obviously, they know each other and they're...
Friends, but I think there was some genuine rubbing the wrong way.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they were. Some of it was a little colorful, and I will leave out some of the colorful details if you want to find it. I think someone suggested this turn into a rap battle, and Tommy said Tommy had a very colorful response to that. But basically, Jonathan said, "I'm ready for the NHC," and then Tommy joined in and said, you know, just something kind of...
Are you interested in handicapping or being a cover boy?
Right, right.
And that was actually before Jonathan was even on the cover the form. Just based on all the other publicity
he'd done in advance. That was, I think, you know, putting out some photos of himself on Snapchat. And so, you know, Jonathan having fun with things. And so Tommy gave him a little grief about it. And then Jonathan... you know, jumps back with, all right, how about a flat bet, $1,000 on who finishes better? And Tommy says, oh, you know, just $1,000? Come on. You know?
It was pretty entertaining. No bet was made.
Because ultimately... Mm-hmm.
Well, Tommy knew he was getting the worst of it.
Right, exactly. Jonathan said, okay, what do you want, $2,500? Name your price. And he said, no way, you're the favorite.
Yeah, he started backing off right away. It was a good Twitter horse player fight. We need more of those that are civil at their core. And you know what I mean?
Right.
You see plenty of that kind of nonsense.
Exactly.
But to have something like that was, you know, basically all in good fun.
Because it ended with the Twitter version of them hugging it out, you know?
Exactly. And I saw them interacting very pleasantly at the NHC. I had my little side bet with Tommy, and boy, I didn't even get close.
Yeah?
He had given me 6-1. We were betting jelly beans. I want to make that clear.
That's right. It 100 was, jelly beans.
We had 100 jelly beans against 600 jelly beans. Mm-hmm. I took the field.
Yeah.
The field only had one representative at the final table, and funny enough, it was the 10th place guy going into the final table, former champion Stanley Bavlish.
Okay.
So I didn't have much chance with the big lead that all those named odds players had.
Sure.
In the end, Paul Matisse, who not only won the NHC, but took advantage of the actual betting market at Treasure Island to put $100 on himself and walk with an extra $10,000, which was just a wonderful cherry on top of a sundae of that story. It was a great NHC. Folks who are listening to the show, I highly recommend, if you're any kind of horse player, that you try to get out there. I always say it this way: try to get out there at least once. But the fact of the matter is, once you get out there once, you're going to want to get back there again. It's a special event with a great feel and a lot of like-minded individuals. And thank you to everybody out there who is who I got to meet or reacquaint myself with. It was just a fantastic amount of support for the tournament coverage on DRF.com, and a lot of people talking about the podcast.
Nice. Cool, that's great. Yeah. Well, before we transition from NHC to these races, leave NHC in the rear view, I got a question for you. I'm going to put you on the
please,
spot.
Please.
So as an observer, as a reporter, as someone who knows these players and is very intimately involved with the contest and the world and everything, was there a single moment that you look at as this was the most exciting or this was my favorite moment of the week?
Definitely. It's a great question, and there are many. But for me, without question, my favorite moment of the entire weekend was getting to go up on that stage Saturday night and for the second year in a row do the NHC Hall of Fame inductions. Mm. So I got to induct Judy Wagner, who's fantastic. She's been on the show before. Just a great horse player, great horse player advocate. And then got to induct the man. There's four or five people I could say this about, maybe three or four, but he's on the list. People legitimately without whom I would not have a job. And talk about great horse player advocate, Stephen Crist from our very own Daily Racing Forum. Being able that was just such an honor to be able to be that part of essentially horse playing history. Inducting two giants into the Hall of Fame. So I'm very grateful to have that opportunity from the folks at the NTRA.
That's a huge honor. That's fantastic. A question. So I know that award ceremony, was it filmed? Is there a way to see any of it?
Gosh, I almost hope not. I was so fried at the end of a long weekend. I'm not saying I did a bad job, but it's the kind of thing where in an ideal world for an honor like that, I would have liked to prepare a day to do that. So I don't know, maybe the NTRA filmed it. I would probably be embarrassed by my performance. Not that, not terrible, but just not, I would have wanted to be a little bit more polished instead of being on a couple of hours sleep for four nights and the busiest weekend of the year.
Sure.
But no, it might exist. We'll have to take a look.
I heard good things about Jonathan's speech. That he was a little funny.
He was very funny. He probably went on a little too long, Jonathan, if you're listening.
Yeah, well, but didn't he comment about that? Didn't he say, I'm going to go on too long and deal with it? And if you didn't want me to go on too long, then
should
have beat me.
He did. It was for those who didn't hear it. It was sort of like a parody of a nervous acceptance speech that contained some actual nervous acceptance speech, where he basically thanked everyone who he encountered throughout the entire year, from Ryan Flanders, who still thinks Jonathan cut him in line at the Horse Player World Series, to whoever idea it was at the Arlington tournament to put a candy bar in the tournament suite, to it went on and
That's
on
great.
Like this, and culminated with him thanking the anonymous tournament player who made a comment in the pages of Daily Racing Form earlier this year after Jonathan got off to his hot start. Yeah, he's doing well now, but wait till he gets to the big boy tracks. He thanked that person for giving him the extra motivation he felt like he needed to push him over the top. So that was pretty cool. And I was also a terrific fun. That was the other part. Eric Wing hosts that show and does an amazing job emceeing the whole weekend, but I got called up on stage to do the Hall of Fame and also to induct Jonathan, which was also an honor, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, folks, if you're listening to the show, you know the deal. I mean, he reached out probably 18 months ago now, couldn't play it on his ADW because he lives in Texas, wanted to get into tournament play, and just asking for some basic advice for me to get him started. He had heard me on the Steve Bick Show talking about tournaments, and of course has just gone on to this meteoric rise. And we can announce, I think, now that Jonathan is going to be a very regular addition to the podcast for this year. We'll get him on a lot of Fridays to help us do some actual handicapping and talk tournaments. I'm very excited to have him as part of the team. He's been always a favorite guest, and there's a good reason to bring him in even more. He's not available today because he is actually, as we record this this pod, flying to the Super Bowl.
Oh.
Not bad.
Wow.
Not bad.
Jeez.
A topic which we may hit a bit later.
Perhaps.
Have a special guest invading the studio later in the show, and we'll do some more Super Bowl talk then. But I think we should leap in and talk about these races for a couple minutes.
Let's do it. I like it.
Excellent. Well, why don't we start off with the 10th race at Gulfstream Park. Mm-hmm. This is the first of the four public handicapper races. Public handicapper... this is so embarrassing. Has their new contest started?
Yes, this is the start of it.
Okay, this is the start. So this that's what I thought. This is the perfect weekend, folks, to jump in.
Right.
Yes. Public Handicapper run three contests every year. One is the just concluded winter contest. I should do a write-up on that. The poor person who won the winter, I haven't even acknowledged yet in my column because I've been so underwater with NHC stuff.
As you put it, the 11th item on a 10-item list.
Exactly.
But now that 10 items are done, you can...
We'll get to that. We'll do a little recap of that next week.
Right.
But that contest is over. Tomorrow, the public handicapper prep, which I believe it's from now until basically the week before the Derby.
Right, it incorporates all the Derby preps.
Exactly.
Yep.
And so that contest, it's entirely free. You can go on publichandicapper.com right now, look at all the prizes for that. And it's sort of a double meaning, because it's not just that it covers the Triple Crown preps.
Sure.
It's also a prep for the main contest, the Public Handicapper Challenge, from which two NHC seats are awarded for absolutely free. I mean, you do need your $50 tour membership,
sure,
but the chance to win NHC seats for free is great. And it's even more than just that. You can also accrue NHC tour points via the Public Handicapper Challenge. And to do that, you just have to finish in the top 10% of the field. In some cases last year, that made the difference between folks finishing in the top 150 on the tour and punching their tickets to the NHC and not. Or it could even make a difference higher up the food chain for folks looking to get into the top 20 and play in that separate top 20 contest that was won by Roger Satina by virtue of his second place finish. So if you're serious about the tour, you need to be playing in Public Handicapper. If you're just somebody who wants an excuse to follow racing and listen to a silly podcast a couple times a week, you should be playing on Public Handicapper. There are weekly prizes and monthly prizes, and this is the first race for the Public Handicapper prep. It is the Gulfstream Park Turf Sprint. Where did you end up in here, Mike?
Well, to me, you know, this is a wide open race. We've got 14 entered plus an MTO who, if it rains enough, I looked at the forecast a little bit. It looks like it's going to rain a little bit later today, maybe a little bit tomorrow. I'm guessing, and I handicapped, that it's not going to rain enough for that MTO to draw in. So I think we're still going to be on the turf.
However, I hope so, because, boy, boring race if that happens.
Absolutely. I mean, maybe, but, yeah, much more boring.
Relatively.
Much more boring, yeah. Certainly. So if I'm thinking it's going to be on the turf, but I'm thinking there's going to be a little cut to the ground, which means one of the main contenders I'm going to be leaning against if that's the case, and that's number 10, Power Alert, who trainer Brian Lynch has already said and scratched a number of times when the ground has come up a little bit softer. And if you just look back through the PPs, you note that some of his worst efforts in North America came on less than firm
several
turf.
Lengths behind the good ground as opposed to the firm, I agree.
Right, and I think this is the reason he showed up in North America coming from Australia was the old connections said, look, he needs a little firmer than what we usually get down here. So that said, if it comes up firm and there's not as much rain, he's a key contender in here. But ultimately, I want to knock, just for a second, another key contender who can win, but at the 3-1 morning line as your favorite, I'm kind of against Pure Sensation. Coming off the last race in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
I thought he had an excuse there.
Sure. I mean, he can win. Look, he can win, but there's 14 other or 13 other horses in the race that are legitimate, and I don't think he's so good as to tower over this field.
I would agree with that.
You know, and I don't want him at 3-1 or less, which I think he may be. And if he goes back to those two races that kind of jump off the page at Parks and Saratoga, you know, yeah, he's absolutely a player, but The Saratoga race, he beat a couple that he's facing here. I don't see them as being top contenders in here. I just want him to prove it to me at a short price. The other stat is, you know, I love the Christophe Clement, Johnny V.
I know. You always pick these Clement Velasquez races.
But it's all turf routes.
Okay.
10 for 27 together last 5 years in turf routes. It's something like 8 for 9 or 8, 9 for 12 in graded stakes in the last 2 years. Last 5 years, they're 0-5. Only one hit the board in turf sprints.
Interesting.
And all were 5-1 or lower. So it does look. It doesn't mean they're not going to win. It just means that these horses tend to get bet. They don't necessarily outperform their odds. And you know, look, he can win, but I'd be leaning against him because I think there's value to be had elsewhere.
Those are all fair comments on Pure Sensation.
Of the short-priced winner or short-priced contenders, the one that I would lean most heavily on would be Amelia's Wild Ride, who I think is just getting better at the age of 5, seems to love Gulfstream, seems to love this kind of trip, I think can improve in the second start as a 5-year-old in the second start of 2016. I think he's absolutely a player in this one, but he's one of the favorites. The long shot stab, and you're probably not surprised about this one because we've talked about it offline. My long shot stab in here is a horse that I kind of fell in love with after a maiden win in June at Churchill. That's number 7, Sylvan Park. If you have time, go back and watch that June 25th race at Churchill Downs. I don't know who he beat. He beat a maiden field that may or may not have included anybody that really went on to do anything, but the way he did it was just really impressive. Came back to validate that effort at Gulfstream at this distance in an allowance race where he beat a couple good horses, including El Botas, who's gone on to do a few good things. Just toss the off the turf race at the fairgrounds, and he's going to be a huge price if he's as good as I saw at that maiden race. He could be a player in here.
I think you're going to get every bit of that 20-1. I wouldn't be surprised if you get 30-1.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a huge. I mean, he's only had 4 races in his life, and you know he hasn't proven at anything close to this level. So
I actually really like a 20-1 shot in here as well.
Yeah,
and it's Simon Barr Sinister, number 14. I felt like Amelia's Wild Ride did run well in that race for sure.
Yeah,
but it was the pace was very fast in there.
Yeah,
and it doesn't. You don't really see it in the running line, but you see it better on the tape.
Yeah.
How it was Simon Barr Sinister to me who was up wide on that page, was a little outpaced early, but then did get the act together and really attacked that pace. So it's, and then it was Amelia's Wild Ride, who to me got, I don't want to say fortunate, but it was a little fortunate. Great run
drafted
on the inside. Yeah. And I think benefited from the race flow in there. Whereas I feel like Simon Barr Sinister got the worst of it, only beaten a length. I mean, the 20-1 is probably a very, very wishful thinking here.
Perhaps.
But I still think the horse is going to be a very nice price. There was also big trouble in the race two back.
Yeah.
I think you got a very valid excuse where the horse took up in that race that Shadow Rock won on December 30th at, I think it was also Gulfstream, yes. I really like this horse at 20-1. I think going to mess around considerably in all three spots in the try, and maybe for multis, if folks want to consider throwing in both of our 20-1 plus shots, get paid in this race if it holds together.
And it's funny. I got a little history with Simon Barr Sinister too, because at the last Gulfstream meet, basically about a year ago, he was one of my bet this plays in this maiden race, where he was 28-1, he set an early pace and tired and finished seventh. So I've loved him for a long time, and I actually was watching this Monmouth race where he opened. It was the first time for new trainer John Mazza. He opened at, I think, from a 15-1 morning line, opened at 3-1, and was stayed there most of the race, and then floated up late. And you got 12-1 if you were paying attention, and he won like a good thing that day. And I noticed something very odd, too. He was backed up underneath really heavily in two exactas, so someone knew.
You're suggesting that There's a Chance Stable might be a betting stable? With a name like There's a Chance Stable, I think there's a chance that it's a betting stable. All right, let's move on to the 13th race at Gulfstream, the nightcap on Saturday. This is the Don Handicap. Very, very interesting race. Not exactly a grade one field, not exactly a grade one plus field,
right.
But a very, very interesting handicapping conundrum, in my opinion.
I started last time.
Yeah, when you host, it's weird to start, but you're right.
Sometimes you have to bite the bullet. This is a tennis match.
I like it. I don't see there being a ton of speed in here. I don't think anybody would. But so I'm looking for a horse who's going to trip out. And that horse, to me, it's funny because I've never been his hugest fan. But I think things are going to just set up so nice for Mashawish here that I'm going to go with him as my top selection. I have, and it's almost more of a by default because I have little knocks on most of the others. I thought he was considerably better than Valid last out. Loves Gulfstream Park, one for one on the dirt at Gulfstream, but excellent historically just in the plant running on the turf. I'm hoping. I mean, the 7-2. This is a race where we should talk about how people are going to bet. The 7-2, that would be great.
Right.
If he's much lower than that, I would probably try to get really creative. But Mashawish is my top pick for this year's running of the Don. Where'd you go?
Well, it's interesting. Mashawish, I mean, there's a number of contenders here, and you're right. It comes down to what kind of price you're going to get on all of them. I don't know if Keen Ice is going to be favored. Maybe he will. He'll be short, but I don't know if he'll be your post-time favorite for a number of reasons. I mean, I have my concerns about him coming off the layoff at the first start as a four-year-old.
Reportedly training well, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, and they want to win a grade one with him, but they've got bigger plans for this horse.
He's going to Dubai, isn't he?
I believe so, yes. Yeah. This is a prep. If he runs well here and then goes to Dubai, they will be over the moon.
That's fair, and maybe Castellano, it's so notable that Castellano ends up here instead of for any of the three Pletchers, but he and his agent could be thinking one race ahead because you ride him here, you keep the mount, and then even if you run third, you're still live for that $10 million Dubai World Cup score. I hadn't even thought about that.
And even later, even after Dubai, I mean, I think they're thinking Breeders' Cup again for this horse. So they've got, look, he can win. But I don't want to, you mentioned pace. He's going to need some pace. I don't know if he's going to get it. Dale Roman's last 5 years, 1 for 37 with three seconds, 5/3 in dirt route graded stakes off of any layoff of 45 days or more.
Interesting.
He's 0 for 16 with only one lonely third off of a layoff of 60 days or more And that's what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, so, you're starting to convince me. And you look at the PPs and you can even see it. You see it with this horse with obviously off the layoff in the BC in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And it's not that I expected him to win, but I mean, he pretty much got pounded.
Right.
And then you've got, but you look at the Big Travers run, which of course was the setup of all time.
Yeah.
But he still ran great. Right. He had the prep there.
Right.
As the favorite, probably. I mean, I think if you're playing tries, if you're playing supers, you got to be using this horse third and fourth at the very least,
sure,
and probably second, third, fourth. But I think you're making a valid case against leaning heavy on the win end at what's going to be a price of 2-1, 5-2.
Yeah, and I don't think there's going to necessarily be a ridiculous pace in here, but I think valid and financial modeling are both going to go. They're going to allow a horse like Mashawish or the one I'm kind of leaning towards is Mexicoma, who I think is going to get a similar trip to Mashawish. It's probably going to be a better price because people are going to be questioning, okay, who did he beat in the last start? But
I have a good knock on him, I think.
Okay, that's fair.
You keep going, though. I liked it. I came very close to landing with Mexicoma, and I got put off as I looked through my notes.
Here's the case at probably twice the price of what Mashawish will be. You've got a horse now as a five-year-old who they obviously thought the moon of. As a two-year-old, they put him in the Breeders' Cup. They were talking Derby for this horse. He's got some issues. He had a lot of layoff lines, punctuated by a layoff of more than a year. Since that layoff and since getting back into the barn of Michael Dilger, he's done nothing but improve. And he seems to be a horse that, though there may be some questions and certainly class and whatnot, this is a horse that they thought a lot of earlier that is now starting to get good as a five-year-old. You're going to get a bit of a price on him. He's going to get a good setup, I think, in the race flow. He's going to get first run on a horse like Keen Ice. At 8-1 or anything close to the morning line, you know, he might be my play.
These are all good points. My knock on him is very simple. It's a card note from Formulator that wide was where you wanted to be. On that Sunshine Millions day.
Yeah.
So well, part of me thinks that when you see one race that leaps off the page like that, it's a little different. If you're dealing with a younger horse, you're dealing with a three-year-old, you see the big race like that, you think, okay, maybe the penny dropped here. Maybe this horse has emerged a new animal. When you're dealing with a five-year-old, especially one who has had some setbacks, as you said, the big numbers that stands out, I tend to look for other reasons why maybe that was a few lengths better than maybe that figure is a few lengths better than the effort was. For me, the fact that he was three wide on the turns there on a day where the outside was better, and I also think this horse, he's always had a little bit of wise guy about him.
Yes.
Going back to when he was a wise guy horse for the Triple Crown Trail.
Yes.
And it makes me worry that 8-1 is going to be more like 5 or 6. I came close to picking him, and that put me off late. But I mean, he's certainly one worthy of talking about. And I'm not saying don't use, but I wouldn't.
Right.
He wouldn't be my, I wouldn't press too hard.
Again, it's all about the price.
Yeah, of course.
I'm gonna make a case for another ridiculous horse. In fact, the longest price in the field.
And I think I can imagine what this case is going to be. You're talking about Closing Bell.
Yes.
I'll let you make it.
Look, on the paper, he looks like a turf horse, right? He is, you know, 7 career starts, 6 of them were on turf. He's been running in, you know, graded stakes company. He's graded 1 placed on the turf. Why does this horse in the first start as a 4-year-old now show up on dirt? Well, his pedigree, essentially.
Pedigree's all dirt, isn't it?
It's all dirt.
Yeah.
The dam was only a dirt runner. His siblings are essentially all. He's the only one of any of his siblings to have won on the turf. He's a half to Monty Bobbin, who won the Spinaway in the Adirondack. He's a half to Hear the Ghost, who won the San Felipe on the dirt, Santa Anita. I don't see why this horse, by Tappet, with Bill Mott training, trying the dirt for the first time since the maiden win as a 4-year-old, could show enough improvement to be a factor here in a race that you've already noted is maybe not your typical grade 1 quality field.
I worry he's going to be too far back, but adding to the Closing Bell case is you look at that dirt race. And just figure-wise, especially where that came in his career,
it's
basically just as good.
Right.
I mean, you know, the numbers, the buyer figures have gotten incrementally better. But when you sort of give him points for the fact of what age he was when he earned that, and you project going forward, he's not crazy for me. The figures are enough far off, and there's enough horses who've run fast figures in here that, again, I'm probably limiting to third. But it's not, also because race flow, I don't think, is his friend. But he's definitely worth talking about. And I'm glad you.
Because I think he'll be 21. I think he'll be even high. He might be. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe everyone's seeing like there's
no. No, he'll be 20-1. He'll be 20-1 for sure.
Geez, it doesn't take me much to make a case for adding a 20-1 to my multis or whatever I'm doing with the race. So
I think we should at least talk. We might as well talk about a couple of the other contenders in here.
Let's
do it. Such a short field.
Yeah.
Where did you land with financial modeling?
He's got to prove it to me. He's got to prove it to me. I don't think he beat a whole lot in that last race.
Certainly much tougher here.
I mean, Kid Cruz, I don't think is the Kid Cruz that he was at his best. He got all his own way on the front end.
Total flow down grade, agreed.
I don't think Valid's going to let him get away with that easy pace.
Who do you think is going to be ahead? Looking at the Moss pace figures, who do they suggest will be ahead between number 4 Valid and number 8 Financial Modeling?
I'm thinking it's going to be Valid. Valid stretching out to 2 turns. I haven't looked at that level, but I basically just did a quick look and thought, okay, Financial Modeling, if you can make a case that he improves off of that last effort and gets a similar easy lead, he's absolutely a player, but I don't know if that's going to happen in this race.
Yeah, I think he's stretched. Valid, I think, is stretched at the mile and an eighth.
I agree.
I
think they cancel each other out.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, both Valid and Financial Modeling are flow down grades to the point where I kind of wanted the next horse in the flight, and that's part of how I ended up there. The other Pletchers here, you've got Made from Lucky. The distance certainly suits him.
Mm-hmm.
Pletcher at Gulfstream, there's a case to be made there. If somehow he were to get forgotten in the wagering, maybe with Rosario on instead of either Johnny V or Castellano,
right.
He's certainly on the radar. And then we've also got It's a Knockout coming back, the another good one of these Pletcher Gulfstream horses for courses it's an interesting field. I think we mentioned everybody in it, but it's also good we hopefully gave people some halfway clever ideas.
I'll say one other little odd stat about Mishawish, or however you say it. I noted Pletcher with Al-Shakab Racing together at Gulfstream and Stakes. They're like 6-8 or some ridiculous, and it's Mishawish and it's a couple
it's
others.
It's mostly him, right? Didn't
yeah.
He won all those turf races. For that
well, and maybe it wasn't even just Stakes. It was like Kozan and, it was it was like all races at Gulfstream. And then together at other tracks, it was like...
Not so good?
Yeah, it was like really low. I tweeted it out right after Mishawish's win in the Hal's Hope. I'll try and revisit that one. Because
yeah, I'd like to see that.
I mean, I don't think there's anything in there. I think it was mostly noise and weird, but it was just one of those, wow.
What's the story? Is that a stat that you got? Can you get that in Formulator?
You can. Fortunately, in Formulator, you can do, anywhere other than Naira, you can do trainer with today's owner.
Yeah.
And so you can look, and then you can add in by track. So, in Florida, you could do that. If they were running it, for whatever reason, the feed that comes from the Naira tracks doesn't allow the...
That's a shame, because it's good info, because it's not just trainers who point to meet, sometimes it's owners, or trainers know what owners' preferences are. A win, they're going to be at Gulfstream for the meet, and that means the world to them to get a couple of winners at Gulfstream.
Yeah.
Maybe for somebody that could be more important than the Saratoga meet if they're going to be somewhere else. So.
Right. I'll take one quick second to do a divergence. Used that yesterday on a horse at Oaklawn, claimed by Steve Asmussen for himself as the owner. And so I looked last 5 years. How many has Asmussen claimed for himself as the owner at Oaklawn? 10 for 24, like 80% of the money.
I think he'd be great. When you see these big trainers like an Asmussen, we saw it with Bill Mott last year at Saratoga, when they're running horses in their own name, they don't have the pressure of an outside owner.
Right.
I think that just gives them the opportunity to spot the horse even better, like without any,
don't
have to worry about any politics.
Right.
They just put the horse where they belong, chance to maybe win a race or two, and then maybe resell that horse or really make some money and do right by the horse in the process. So that would have been my hypothesis with a guy like Asmussen who wins so much.
Yeah, it was interesting though.
Does it that well. Let's move from the East Coast to the West and head out to beautiful Santa Anita where we're going to be talking first. There's so much good racing.
I know.
I've only looked at the ones for the show today. So if you have any other Santa Anita thoughts, feel free to pipe them in here at some point.
Well, isn't Songbird the best bet of the day, Pete?
I think if you told me I'm going to put a bullet to your head and you have to give me one horse to win, Songbird would become the best bet of the day, yes.
Define best and bet together in that context.
Exactly. But I haven't looked at the field. Is there anything in there on paper that even remotely
The Phil D'Amato horse, Street Fancy, is trying her for the first time, winner of the Starlet, and I guess that's your logical second choice if you're trying to knock the 1-5 morning line favorite.
I don't see that too often.
Who
did you end up with in the San Antonio? I'll make you go first here.
San Antonio. Well, boy, I tweeted out last night. I mean, you talk about the questionable field of the dawn. How weak is the San Antonio?
It's not very strong, is it?
I mean, thank God for last year's running of the San Antonio where you had California Chrome versus Shared Belief. Otherwise, this race may be in serious jeopardy of getting downgraded. Because you go back to 2014. Do you remember the 2014 San Antonio?
I don't off the top of my head.
I'll tell you. The Exacta featured two horses that are running tomorrow. It was Blingo over Imperative.
Giants of the Turf. Sorry, I'm Mr. Positive. I hate to make those kind of jokes. I couldn't resist.
In a seven-horse field in 2014, Blingo beat Imperative. And I think that was the beginning of the end for Game On Dude, actually. Anyway. Similar field. I tweeted it last night. Since the start of 2015, this combined field have run in 38 graded stakes. They have four wins together. Two of them were by El Kabir, and two of the four, El Kabir and Opportunity, came in January of 2015. So in the past year, they only have two graded stakes wins combined. And one of them is a horse that I think is going to get quite a bit overlooked. It's the only one with a grade one win in the past year. It's number four, Hard Aces. Look, I don't think he's the most likely winner. I don't even know if he's the best horse in the race. But I think he's going to be a little overlooked. And I can make a case for forgiving some of his recent efforts. The last race in the San Pasquale, he's a closer that was trying to run into
a
really, really, really slow pace. Yeah. And Joe Talamo started getting into him on the backstretch even before the turn. And he ran on pretty well considering he was pretty up against it pace-wise. Race before that, the Breeders' Cup Classic, he's not facing American Pharoah, even FNX or Honor Code or even Keen Ice in this field here. Any of those would be stone cold.
It was also, again, a horse basically completely loose and lonely.
Yeah, right.
Excuse that pertains to his three race back as well.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I'm seeing where you're going.
Three
here.
Race back, another pace compromise.
But are you seeing a lot of pace on this field?
No.
Or is it going to be the same
necessarily.
Story again?
I don't know. I think Cat Burglar's probably going to go. I think you might have even a fresh Donworth who's going to go. Cyrus Alexander's shown a little bit of speed. Look, I'm not saying they're going to be, 22 and 44, but I think I'm hoping he gets something more than 49 to the half that he got in last race. So
my knock on him perpetually is he was the third best race in the race of his lifetime, and that in that Hollywood Gold Cup, he couldn't have been more fortunate to win
that
race.
That's fine. Go to the window and cash your ticket on the two better horses in the race. Need him to be best. I just need him to win, and he's going to be
point.
A big price.
No, I'm not knocking the pick. Just talking him through.
Yeah.
I think if he's 10-1. And you can construct me a scenario where there's that kind of pace.
I think he's more.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the craziest thing I ever heard.
And look, his best races have come second off the layoff, including that win in the Gold Cup. John Sadler does better second off the layoff with these types. He's 7-16, 378 ROI last 5 years in dirt route graded stakes second off the layoff. Welcome Matt Bernier. He's joining a little bit late. Maybe we'll put him on the spot for a couple thoughts.
Yeah, we're talking Santa Anita. That's his track. We're definitely getting his thoughts here.
He's been working well since that last race with a couple of fast works. I think he's a huge price in here. I think he's almost the forgotten horse because I think your wise guy people are going to be like Cyrus Alexander's on the improve and look at that pedigree. with Hollendorfer. There's a lot of people on Donworth who I don't want at anything less than 20-1.
20-1 on Donworth? What are you talking about?
Yeah, no.
What are you talking about? He's my pick in the race.
I'll cold water your pick after you give the case for him.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think the case for him is he's a horse who showed tremendous potential. He's been off for a long time. He's apparently been working well. Even if you look at the bare form of his races, he had multiple opportunities where he was maybe not racing on best parts of racetracks. And I think that he, to me, looks like the horse who's going to get a nice pocket trip or could even go, just depending on how the pace shakes out. But he's going to be in a position to win the race, turning for home against what you've already established is a very weak field.
That's fair. But here's the knock, okay? A number of different knocks. You've got a horse who won, he was supposed to be a superstar. The secret was out with in his debut. He was great in that race. I mean, he almost, Eric Cancel almost put Rosario over the rail in that race, and he still comes back and wins by a neck. They thought the world of him. They're talking Triple Crown trail. He's favored in his next two starts. You know, he was not as good, flow or whatever aside, he wasn't as good as Divining Rod in that race, who, even though I loved, I'm not sure Divining Rod was one of the best of his generation. Back in the Sir Barton, very little excuse in there. And then Matt, you and I talked about this. He shows up at Delaware as an MTO in a listed stakes. If you're thinking that you've got a legitimate horse.
It was a home game.
Nah, come on.
It was a home game.
You're thinking you've got a legitimate horse here who's going to be really good.
Matt, you're going to have to settle this argument. Donworth, use or toss?
It depends. I mean, I look at
and
it.
He's
and
lower
say,
than 6-1. Is part
he,
of it.
Well, you could make the argument he may be the favorite. He's going to be, if not the outright
he's
favorite,
the
he'll be very, very
he's the
close.
Wise guy,
I'm thinking he's going to be somewhere 2.5-1.
Okay. That makes me see the negative case more.
That
I was taking the morning line a little literally.
That being said, I think he fits in here perfectly. This is a horse who, even as a 3-year-old, his numbers were comparable to what any of these older horses are capable of running. So at the end of the day, he doesn't have to be a monster to win this race. I mean, we're talking about opportunity and imperative. Neither one of them like to win races very often.
No.
Those are going to be your top two choices.
Your favorite hasn't won a race in 13 races. Your second choice hasn't won a race in 9 races.
I mean,
I'm seeing why Donworth is going to be the favorite here. You're right.
Imperative
right.
is 0-12.
I give up.
Or 0-10, rather, at Santa Anita.
Yeah.
The race as a whole, though, I think it's very interesting. You've got to kind of make a decision. If it's not Donworth, you either like the horses coming from the San Pasqual or you like the horses coming from that optional claim.
Can we get you a mic?
I have it on.
Oh, you got a mic. Okay, good.
I thought you were filibustering. You were really just talking that long? I thought you were filibustering.
I couldn't see because you're doing the Periscope.
Here. Of the two, I prefer the optional claimer just because, look, I'm probably going with a horse. Maybe he's just not good enough. I know he tripped out. I think Cat Burglar is going to work out an ideal trip in here. Whether he's good enough, whether he really is good enough at 9, we'll find out. If you could guarantee me that Cyrus Alexander would be professional, I'd be all over him. But last time out, he changed leads. He did everything the way you want to see a horse do it. The problem is in his workouts subsequently that we've seen. You can see him on YouTube or wherever. He's being an idiot again, and I don't know if that's just him still not putting it all together. There's ability there. He just can't get his act together. I can't back him at a shortish number. If he goes up a 10-1, which he's not going to,
no.
Boy, he's going to be forwardly placed in a race where it doesn't look like there's a ton of pace. I want those two horses, and look, I think Donworth, I think you use him. You have to use him.
Let me ask you.
Here's my other knock.
You go ahead. You're still talking about Donworth?
Doug O'Neill, last 5 years, first start after a trainer switch into a graded stakes, 0-24 with only 4 that hit the board. 0-10, none of them hit the board in the last 2 years.
Interesting. So, maybe he gives lets him figure something out first before he...
Well, and the other thing to keep in mind, too, this is allegedly a prep for the World Cup.
And this is a lightning race
horse. They're also talking Dubai with him?
Yeah, they're talking Dubai with him. But, I mean, look, I think it would be ignorant to ignore this one's talent.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, he fits in here. You could make the case he's the most talented horse in the race.
At the price I'm expecting to get, I'm against him, which is why I was being a little flip when I said I'd need 20-1, knowing that I wouldn't get that.
You can lay me 20-1.
No thanks.
I think from a number standpoint, I think a fair number. If you ran this race 100 times, I think he wins probably 20 of them, maybe 18 of them. So you're looking somewhere in that, 4, 9-2, 5-1 range. He's not going to be that.
That sounds about right.
You're a little more bullish than I am. I would probably put it more closer to 10 or 12 times, but
I guess the question is, if that's the case, who's making up the difference in that field? Because I can't bank on opportunity.
Well, he picked hard aces, for God's sake. So,
I think maybe he is putting it all back together, but where's the pace he's going
to
get?
Well, that's the thing. I think Donworth, as a fresh horse who seems to be working well, might show a little speed. You had a little bit more speed from Cat Burglar than you normally would see. I think on the stretch out, he might go. Cyrus has shown some speed. I don't know if they're going to be 22 and 44, but I think he's going to get a little bit more than he got last time for sure, and I think he's certainly going to get a little more than he got in the Awesome again. And what I said before you came in was, I'm not saying he's the most likely winner, but I expect him to go up from that 10-1 because, as Pete put it, even when he won the Gold Cup, he was the third best in that race. I think for a horse that you can excuse a few recent efforts that may, I hope, get a better setup than he's seen in recent starts, that seems to be working well, at the 15-1 or what I'm likely to get, against a field that I got questions about all around, he's worth a stab.
All right, let's move on to the San Marcos. We got about 10 minutes left here. We have two topics to cover, so we're going to go fairly quickly yes. between the San Marcos before we segue to the big game. But I will start off with this
Please
one.
Please do.
And you guys can tell me if I'm crazy. I was going to try to bet Ganesh in here.
I haven't done our video yet. I'm picking Ganesh.
Oh, really?
Ganesh. Too much weight. The weight is on Ganesh.
I mean, There's a lot of different things going on with this horse, but the very quick case is Mandela. I trust him so implicitly. I think it's a really big rider switch. I like this horse's races a lot better when Pratt was in the irons before. I anticipate getting a good switch, a good trip in here. He hasn't won since he's gotten to the States. I think that helps us with our price. I'm going with Ganesh. Big price.
I like it. I like Ganesh. I think he's a player in here, and it's another one where I think Flamboyant at those odds is probably going to have to prove it to me again that he can put together two races like that. I went with, for me, if John Sadler has a good day, I'll have a good day, because I went with number two, Class Leader, who I think hasn't really been exposed on the turf. He's a half to a really good horse, albeit on the dirt in Student Council. I think he ran a really good race.
He was actually a synth horse, wasn't he, Student Council?
Boy,
no, I think he was a dirt horse.
Didn't he win the Pack Classic?
He might have.
But I think he also acted on dirt. Yeah, I think he was both. That helps the case. Right. If he acted on synth, that helps the case.
And strangely, he's by King Mambo, which would make you think he was a turf horse. Yeah. But anyway, he's been working well since the last race, which is the Cat Burglar, Cyrus Alexander. He ran third in that race, which could very well be a key race this weekend. He was working, I think, with Hard Aces and outworked him since that race. I think you're going to get a fair price on a horse that's shown some talent and I think maybe wants to get to the turf now, being by Smart Strike out of a Chris S. Mayer. He's just one that I find a little interesting. I also have to take a minute to talk about Phil D'Amato and the meet that he's having. You got Phil D'Amato with the 8, Hey Dude, 5-2 on the morning line. He's your favorite. And number 9, Abby Vale. I looked at this meet, and prior to the meet, Jonathan Kinchin and I did a webinar about playing Santa Anita, and I said, I think the days of getting prices on Phil D'Amato on the turf are gone. Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, he played a big role at the final table the other day. Yeah.
9-27 this meet on the turf. 5 times he's run horses together in the same race on the turf. Oh, 458 ROI, by the way. 5 times they run together. Twice he's had the cold exacta, including the $1,500 exacta in the Daytona, including the exacta the last time Hey Dude and Abby Vale ran together. He ran 1-3 another time. He missed by a neck with obviously in the San Gabriel, okay? So this is a guy, like, it's just insane. It's insane, you know? So it's basically 9 wins out of 22 races on the turf this meet. incredible.
Everything he puts out runs. That's what Duke Batista told me when 100%. we were talking about the one of the motto winners that he had. I can't remember if it was at the final table or maybe to propel him to the final table, but he was good last weekend. He's been good all meet.
Yeah.
Ganesh, what is your case?
Yeah, first thing, I got to kill the Periscope. Going to have to watch the video later. Illman and I will put out this race.
Excellent.
I got to save the battery. The overall, Ganesh, you look at his last race, he had no chance. Disaster trip. The time prior to that, I don't think that's indicative of his real ability.
He wants a little further in the mile.
And you look at those races over the summer and even last spring, I mean, this is a horse who, when Ashley's Love Sugar and Big John B were in form, wasn't that far off. If either one of those horses was in this spot, they'd be a choice. Ganesh is probably going to be, I'm thinking, between 12 and 15.
Yep.
I like him.
Yeah, I like it. All right, that's the public handicapper races. We got about 4 minutes left, and Mike's going to feel very excluded here because we're going to talk about the Super Bowl.
Sorry. Done.
I actually have a fairly strong opinion from a betting point of view about this race, but the market for it's been fascinating. I haven't looked lately, but the Carolina Steam just keeps coming from what I've been seeing. Are you going to bet the Super Bowl, first of all?
No.
Okay.
No, I won't. And the problem is this looks a lot eerily similar to the way that everything went with, I don't want to say eerily similar, but it's very, there are things that match up with the way the Patriots-Broncos game went, where on paper it looks like this is, you know, the way that the Broncos had played the week prior against the Steelers, they looked terrible. The way the Pats had played the week prior against the Chiefs, albeit at home, just, you know, pretty much manhandled them, and everyone thought that the Chiefs were the hottest team in the league at that point. And seeing the way that Carolina has just absolutely dump-trucked two of the best teams in the league in Seattle and as well as Arizona, boy, you would think that this is, and just the way the teams look, boy, I mean, Peyton Manning, I understand people want to say this is the last hurrah and he's putting it back together a little bit. He's not. He's not the same guy.
He had a couple of really good drives last week, and I think he got a little bit lucky,
yeah,
to be honest. That's my read.
He's not the same guy anymore, and Cam Newton has brought his game. I've always been a fan, but this year particularly, he's brought it to the next level from whether he is a pocket passer or he can move on the run, and I think that's the biggest thing, too, where, you know, with the Patriots, I mean, Brady, look, with the exception of that 12-yard run, which I thought was just the funniest thing I've ever seen.
It was very
looked like a gazelle out there. You know, Brady is locked down to the pocket. He can move in the pocket, but he's not going to be able to escape and get out. Newton, at any point, so as good as DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller are, at any point, Newton can get out of the pocket and burn you for 20. Because he's just as fast as any of the running backs, whether it's Jonathan Stewart or little bowling ball Mike Tolbert. I think Carolina wins. The number, I think, is now 6. Man, 6 is a lot of points.
It's a lot of points.
But I would like to think they win by a touchdown. If I had to pick with the number, I'd lay the points.
Here's my idea for this one. Usually in football, I feel like the over and under are correlated better to one team or another. In other words, if such and such a team is going to win, you know, if the Patriots are going to do well, it's going to be over.
Yeah.
If a more defensive-oriented team is going to do well, you look at the under. In my view, I feel like both teams' scenarios for winning correlate to the under here.
Okay.
And it makes me think about the under. Because I think if their defense is spot on the way that they have been so often this year, it's obviously not going to be Manning flinging the ball all around. It's going to be ball control. It's
sure.
going to be time-consuming drives. I think it's pretty obvious that Denver correlates to the under. But my thought with Carolina, everybody's jumping up and down about all the points they've been scoring. But if you really look at how they've generated those totals in the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of turnovers
yeah.
and a lot of wild, wacky play. I think facing a much better defense, they're not going to be scoring anywhere near the kind of points they have the last couple of weeks. I think that's obvious. But I think they would even be happy to control the ball more and have more progressive drives as opposed to the sort of quick strike off turnovers kind of things they're going to be doing. I think Manning, since coming back from the injury, is not the turnover prone guy he was earlier in the season. I think they're the more likely winner. The 6 points make me nervous. I'm going to go under and hope that hope that that number continues to climb as more public money comes in and hope I can get away with that.
Just because in timing-wise, they just put out a 30 for 30 about this game, boy, probably, or about this team month ago, whatever it was, but about the Bills when they went to four straight Super Bowls. And the first one when they played the Giants, you almost wonder if it has that sort of feel to it where the Giants knew,
keep away.
The Giants knew the way to beat them was to not let the offense have the ball, not let Kelly and Thurman Thomas, who ran absolutely wild in that game, have the ball. You wonder, is it going to be a similar thing where you look at the Broncos and say, the way for us, as good as our defense is, the way to not lose this game is to make sure that their offense doesn't have the ball for as long as, you know. So if for some reason, boy, if you get a really skewed time of possession, if you get something in the, you know, 60% to Denver, 65% even, because, I mean, I could imagine them trying to just churn out 8 yards, 10 yards, 8 yards, 10 yards, and try to have, you know, 14, 15 play drives. Yeah, I mean, the under seems like that could be a very real possibility. And then as much as I think that could happen, you look at what they did to Seattle. I know Seattle was a little bit of a flawed team this year. Seattle coming into the playoffs, I think everyone thought was a very dangerous team, albeit a sixth seed. And the way that they put the boots to them, I understand, like you said, a lot of it was turnover driven too. They got two picks in the first half against Wilson, but boy, it'll be very interesting to see. And there's a part of me, not just because New England and whatnot, like I don't care about the whole Brady Manning thing. I think that's way overblown. Like Manning is one of the best all time. Brady's one of the best all time. I don't care who's better than whatever. But at the end of the day, I like Newton, and I think he could be. It's almost time. We got to turn the page. Manning is riding off into the sunset. I know Brady played well this year, but he's probably realistically got two, maybe three more years.
Getting up there. Doesn't matter how much algae.
Breeze is getting older. Yeah. You know, now you've got Russell Wilson coming in. You've got Cam Newton. I think it's time to turn the page. I want the Panthers one.
I like it. Mike, are you even going to watch the game?
Probably not.
There's no racing on.
I have not watched a single play from scrimmage of any football game, pro or college, this season, so I see no reason why that should change this Sunday.
What will you do instead?
Quarter horses.
Quarter horses. Are there quarters running?
I
don't know. If the weather's halfway good, probably go to Central Park and, you know, play with the kid. And,
fair enough.
Know, just run
San
around.
Anita might not be over by then, unless they go with an earlier post.
No, they go
Sunday.
Early post. Early and post. End early. Yeah. Yeah, we've got our contests over the weekend. On Sunday, we've got a BC qualifier feeder for $21, and we've got a DRF qualifier win your way to Gulfstream or Santa Anita. But they both wrap. They both wrap
early.
Super early. Yeah. It's. Other than Mike will be alone in Central Park.
Yeah, you'll have the park to yourself, yeah, man.
That's the beauty of it. You know?
Any dinner reservation you wanted, that would be another thing you could
anywhere.
Probably do. Yeah. Yeah, that's if you want to spring for the sitter, you could do that too. All right, folks, that's it for the what is it? It's February 5th, isn't it?
That's right.
February 5th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. Want to thank special guest Matt Bernier and co-host Mike Hogan. We will be back at you next week. Until then, may you win all your photos.